Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
There are billions, if not trillions, of dollars. This will be the largest lawsuit in U.S. history. That's not hyperbole. That's what's coming. This is going to be a grand mess. Because I am firmly in the belief Supreme Court's going to strike it down.
So this is a good friend of mine who lives here in Pensacola, Henry Kelly. He is a principal with Blue Wind, and he gave a presentation to First Place Partners that I happen to have a recording of, and it was explaining the tariffs and the lawsuit under the Supreme Court that we covered when it happened, the IEEPA lawsuit, where, and I agree with Henry's assessment that the Supreme Court is almost certainly going to strike down the basically all the tariffs the president has put in place. But there are other mechanisms and avenues through which the president is legally able to find and apply tariffs. And in fact, they've filed over hundreds of these Section 232 investigations that take, 9, 10, 12 months to resolve. And by the time the Supreme Court gets done doing what it's going to do, which is this summer, next summer, they're going to have refunds owed in the billions of dollars, possibly trillions of dollars, depending on what the outcome of the trial, the case is, and also depending on who has filed for extension of their 314-day time period from when you collect the tariff to when you're able to ask for a refund. They're having to file separate lawsuits in order to extend that time period. There's a lot of backstory. I covered it at 6 o'clock. Okay, but in this presentation, there was lots of other stuff about tariffs that I want you to understand. I feel like Henry Kelly gave us a seminar on tariffs, and it was incredibly useful. And again, the IEEPA tariffs, the emergency crisis solve a problem tariffs that the president, I think, has abused his power on. He does not have the justification to use those because tariffs are taxes and Congress has the power to tax. But there was a reason they used IEEPA to apply these tariffs.
So the president has plenty of tariff options, but they chose a unique interpretation of IEEPA because it had no process and the president was able to very quickly apply tariffs. So this is where, when I say I think the Supreme Court is going to strike this down, and as I said, two courts agree with this, is he has other options. These require time and investigation and also allow for public comment.
Right, which, again, that's what's happening now, the Section 232 investigation. By the way, it's the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. It's designed to give the president the ability to use tariffs as a tool of foreign policy in a crisis. Well, we're not in a crisis. Not of the sort that the act itself would allow for. So the power to apply tariffs is a power to apply taxes, which still resides within Congress, and they have not given that power, nor even could they give that power to the president. And so that's why he's going to lose this lawsuit. But again, that's what Henry is explaining, is there's a lot more to the story than just that. Also, how do the they did it because it was fast, even maybe knowing that they were going to lose. Okay? How does all this affect your ability to get things from, say, a supplier who creates a product that you are wanting to buy but happens to be in a tariffed country?
We have a supplier. We make a very specialized, that makes a very specialized metal part.
For Blue Wind.
And GE is a pain in the patootie about the engineering, the specs, the amount of metal. It's good NASA metal. It's really advanced stuff.
You, by the way, you want them to be picky about this because they're putting them inside the nacelles, the machine heads that go on top of the giant windmills. He's not complaining. He's just saying they're picky for a reason. It's good quality metal, and they get it from one place overseas.
He put a tariff on that country, and we're like, well, we need to find another country. So when I spoke to the supplier.
Because cost, right? The cost for this country has gone up so much. Let's find another supplier in a different country that doesn't have the tariff. Natural business inclination. You want to buy a thing, the price of that company goes up, you find another company. The price from that country goes up, you find another country.
So when I spoke to the supplier, he said, listen, let me explain to you what's going to happen. He goes, my factory has X capacity, and we're at 100% of it. And he says, you're going to take your capacity and you're going to go to another country. And he said, I already have a Chinese company that wants to come in and take that capacity. And he said, in 2 years, you're going to come back to us to get back in our, because we make a good quality product, good price, et cetera, et cetera. You're going to come back in 2 years and try to get back into our supply chain. And he goes, we're not going to let you back in.
Because we've filled your seat with somebody else's demand. Remember what happened with chip manufacturing in COVID, and we stopped buying cars, and so we stopped buying chips. So they either had to shut down lines or they found other people to sell their chips to, and then we went back to buy the chips to make the cars, and they weren't available anymore because the capacity had been sold to somebody else. Same problem, right? So in particular with Blue Wind, but think of this happening in thousands of different companies across the country under these tariffs. What do you do? Do you keep buying the now very expensive thing from the one reliable place where if you shift away, you won't be able to go back to them? Or do you try to find a new one and hope in the end it all shakes out and China or somebody else doesn't step in to acquire the capacity that you had been purchasing? You follow the challenge.
So the belief that the United States can just throw its muscle around is the rest of the world has grown up. And Chinese company, Indian companies, whenever we pull our capacity out of a factory somewhere around the world, there is somebody to move in the next day. And you can't easily go back because now I'm an unreliable customer. I don't blame the guy.
Right? If we bailed on them because of the tariffs and then the tariffs change and we go back and they're like, well, you bailed once. Why wouldn't you bail again? Why might things not change again? Isn't this a problem? I'm an unreliable customer. You can understand why they would say no.
And so the decision we had to make was, do we find a middle ground on price that works for us and keep him as our supplier so that we protect that relationship? Or do I go find another country, try to get at a lower price with the risk that the president puts a tariff on them? So I go through all the hassle of changing from here to going over there, and the president can arbitrarily put a tariff in effect. That's what those of us in this business are dealing with on a global basis.
In all kinds of industries, in all kinds of ways, with all kinds of products across all kinds of countries. Because of, what do we always talk about? The uncertainty of it all. That's one of the big problems. We'll come back to this in a second. John, I asked you before, but are you learning anything?
Yes. More than I wanted to.
And it's really thinking about the implications of how stuff is being done right now and what it's doing to, for example, you know, little old Pensacola, one supplier of one part to GE Vernova. But this same problem is applying to thousands of companies across big and small domains in the United States because of the current tariff volatility, right? John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you, nor delays. I'm seeing everything rolling smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Okay, so back to Henry Kelly. Again, he's a principal with Blue Wind. He's a good friend and, you know, talking about how the tariffs work and how it's affecting their business, which is an example of how it's affecting businesses all over the country.
The IEEPA decision is going to be historic. When the Supreme Court finally rules, it's going to be a historic decision. Tariffs, though, are not going away. There are plenty of other mechanisms.
And he's right. I mean, don't for a minute think that if the president loses at the Supreme Court, which almost certainly he will, that means, well, all of a sudden we're going to go back to status quo ante where the tariffs don't exist. No, they're using other mechanisms to implement tariffs. The president is so committed to tariffs that he's not going to just stop because the Supreme Court says you can't do it this way. And he is working. The administration is actively working on all of these other ways. They just take time.
Guys like me, brokers, we're here to help businesses avoid. One of the things we've started calling ourselves is tariff engineers. Can you redesign a product in a way? Can you replace metal with a composite material? Can you replace aluminum with a different metal? So people are beginning to look at, is there a way to redesign a product to avoid certain tariffs? But tariffs shape the whole economy.
Yeah, which makes perfect sense. You're now trying to find, well, we know there's a tariff on aluminum, so can we make the same product ceramic? There's a tariff on steel. Can we make the same product out of wood or something else that doesn't have a tariff applied to it or doesn't have that tariff applied to it? That's that creativity. You're now trying to engineer around the cost problem, around the, you know, the supply problem, basically, because your end goal, you don't think you can just suddenly jack up the prices on your consumers. This next piece is, it's it's so fascinating, but it will help you understand a part where Trump has been right. And I agree with Henry that Trump has been right about abuses of the tariff system. And again, remember, tariff system is incredibly complicated. It's a very difficult test to pass. It's Henry, who is one of the smartest guys I know, he passed with like one question. Like it takes a 70 and he got a 72. Like 20% of people pass the test. It's a mostly failed test, okay? So one aspect of tariffs has to do with what they call the de minimis rule, which is when things are under $800, there's no tariff applied to them. And Trump changed that.
I will tell you one that I really agree with the president on, and it's called the de minimis tariff. So if you've gone overseas and you come back with your family and customs goes, you got anything to declare, you're allowed up to $800 per person. You don't have to pay anything, you know. So that's called a de minimis. So if you've seen all these things online, Amazon, people selling items, you know, pens, you know, knickknacks, what China and other countries were doing was this. They would have 1,000 LLCs set up, and they would rent a container, but they would rent a pallet, and they would put $799 worth of pens on one pallet, and that's company A. Then company B would rent a pallet, and company C would rent a pallet, all of which magically came out to $799 worth of goods. So this one container would contain 100 different companies, all under one corporate umbrella, of course, hundreds of thousand dollars worth of merchandise they paid no tariffs on.
And Trump got rid of that. But you get the scheme, right? If you can bring in under $800 and not pay a tariff, well, we'll just bring in $799 on a pallet under fake company X, and then fake company Y, and then fake company Z, and eventually we got 100 of these fake companies, and we bring in, you know, 799,000, or well, I guess 79,000. But, you know, you get the point. If you multiply it out, you can do it this way and avoid paying any tariffs whatsoever. And Trump got rid of that. And Henry's like, that makes sense, because they were abusing the process that was put in place basically for individuals to bring stuff back without having to pay an import tariff, right?
You know, people have 3D printers, children, grandchildren. There could be a whole cottage of industry of people making things, but they can't compete with that. Now that the de minimis, the Trump administration removed the de minimis, if it comes into the U.S., it's going to have a tariff on it. So that is one advantage where I think for small businesses and mom and pop shops and people that just want to make stuff, extra money at home, is very beneficial. So that's where I'd say the tariffs, the de minimis tariffs, I think, are an advantage.
Okay, so tariffs create instability. Tariffs increase costs. Tariffs make it difficult to find suppliers for things because you try to go somewhere else and maybe you don't even solve your problem or can't get the kind of thing that you want ultimately. Those are bad things. There are also good things in what Trump has done in terms of the de minimis standard and changing that. Somebody texts in and says, well, Andrew, none of this really addresses the unfairness of the prior system where other countries were tariffing the crap out of us and we weren't tariffing them back. Oh, no, agreed. I mean, of course. Of course. That, you know, saying that the way it's being done creates problems is not to ignore that there were already problems and Trump is trying to solve those problems. I mean, of course. I mean, right. Don't disagree. I completely agree with you. The problem is that, especially under the current situation where these tariffs are almost certainly going to get struck down, other tariffs are pending, what is the likelihood that one set of tariffs or all of the tariffs, or generally speaking, the economic conditions under which this is all happening, are going to be consistent over the course of a year or two or three? Well, that's affecting whether anybody's willing to invest in industry or, you know, in factories or anything that is going to be vulnerable to these kinds of shifting, constantly volatile changes.
The idea that you're all businessmen and women in here. So does anybody want to open a metal parts company in the U.S. right now for me so that I can make my metal inside the United States?
Which has been Trump's goal, right? To get onshore, bring all the industry back, right?
If you got a few million dollars laying around, anybody? Because we don't know what's going to happen in 2 years. So nobody's willing to take the risk. I'm as Ed mentioned, I was in the Army. I want to buy American, but I can't. It's not that simple because what we buy is complicated. So this is where the idea of just throwing a tariff to encourage manufacturing as it gets more expensive and more complicated is not, it's not helping Henry's opinion.
If you knew that all of the stuff that's in place now was going to be there in a year or two post the Supreme Court, post Trump, et cetera, then you could make decisions based on the projection of stability. We don't have that projection of stability capability. And so people are just, I'm going to hold my money. I'm going to hold my investment, or I'm going to find something else to do with it, because where are we going to build a metal parts company? In Brazil, in Indonesia, in Omaha? Well, let's do something else, because God knows what's going to happen. That's part of the, historically, the argument against making changes is the fact that changes create instability. If you know, one of the keys to stability is that companies then operate within that. Whatever the rules are, as long as they're the same, we can figure out how to make it work. The change, the chaos, the unpredictability is a dampener, a killer to economic investment. 7:25 on News Radio 92.3. We'll finish this up at 8 o'clock. If you want to go back to the podcast page and listen to the 6 o'clock. John, same question. Learning still? Fascinating?
Yes,
complicated,
I'm still learning.
Interesting?
Yeah.
A lot to digest.
There's a lot.
But who understands this? Who's explaining it? I didn't. That's why I'm sharing it with you, because I want you to be smarter than the average bear. I want you to be smarter than the average American and talk about this stuff with some knowledge behind it. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Thought it was much simpler, but I guess not. So, no accidents to report to you right now. We're just keeping it simple with the traffic, though. No accidents, no delays. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Ring in the new year island style with family and friends on Pensacola Beach. Join the Pensacola Beach Chamber of Commerce for the Gulf Coast's biggest fireworks show, lighting up the Santa Rosa Sound at midnight. Then live bold, start cold with laughter and a splash at the 2026 Polar Bear Plunge at Paradise Bar and Grill, New Year's Day, noon till 3. Dress up, dive in, and join hundreds of brave beachgoers for this wild, chilly tradition you'll never forget. Plan your holiday fun at PensacolaBeachChamber.com.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us on Friday at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
It will be an honor, sir.
From all of us at the WEAR Morning News, and there's a lot more of us than you see every day on TV, we certainly wish you happy holidays.
From our family to yours, all the joys of the season.
Hi, this is Sheriff Chip Simmons wishing you a safe holiday season. Remember, please don't text and drive.
Start your mornings off informed with all things Pensacola on the Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Can we build it?
Yes, we can!
I had to.
Why?
Because...
Why would you ruin something?
I didn't. That was just the way the kid said it, and I'm sorry, but I had to do it.
Somebody says, good morning, Andrew. How much money has been generated by the tariffs that President Trump has initiated? Billions, hundreds of billions. The next question is, should not the tariff money be used to pay down our national debt? If that's the case, then I'm all for it. I would be more. Yeah. I mean, you have like the Trump dividend, which I think is a terrible idea. I think pay off the debt. Yeah, for sure. No problem. The problem is, okay, just walk with me. If the tariffs get struck down and all that money or a massive chunk of that money is owed as a refund and they already spent it, then what? Then the federal government spent money. I mean, then they have to raise debt, right? That's what they'd have to do. But that's part of the problem. And frankly, one of the theories about some of the Trump dividend, tariff dividend approach is it was designed to make people feel like, we've got a benefit. And now these mean old companies who are just trying to stay in business and are suing to undo the tariffs that are probably illegal, we're going to blame them for having to pay back the dividend that we accept. I mean, like, you get kind of how all that works together and the complexity of it. Okay. If an importer is trying to comply with a very complicated set of tariffs, complicated normally, let alone under the Trump administration, and then has to pay these things, meanwhile going through the legal process of suing to declare them unconstitutional and suing to extend the timeline so they can get the payment back that they're going to be owed for those tariffs, and having to waste legal money to do that because you're not going to get paid your legal fees by the department, by the federal government, for suing them to prove that what they did was unconstitutional, and you had to spend the time in it and the lost, you know, interest revenue, all that, like all the carrying costs of the debt meant spent on the legal fee. Like, it's incredibly burdensome, even if they win, aside from the complexity of tariffs. John's over here, his head spinning. I want your head to spin a little bit, but I want it to spin in a way that you kind of get what's going on at the same time. Steve Taylor's in the newsroom with our headlines. Steve?
Well, the new New York Pensacon, pardon me.
Say the New York Pensacon?
I was thinking Pensacola in my, because
all right, fair enough.
I was talking about the celebrations, of course. You know, in New York, they dropped the ball and all that.
They did drop the ball.
Yeah. And as we're running out of time, I have a whole list, which we'll talk about next hour, of the way they celebrate New Year's Eve and what they drop in different cities around the country.
Oh, nice. I like that. That's good.
That's a tease for next hour.
Very good. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Mayor D.C. Reeves. Got a lot of things. We always have more than we can ever get to with him, but we'll have a good conversation with him, of course, coming up. And if you have questions about the tariff stuff, text me, 437-1620. I am definitely not an expert, but I will do my best to answer them based on what I've learned.
People preparing to celebrate New Year's Eve in the eastern U.S. will most likely see frigid temperatures. Fox meteorologist Adam Klotz reporting from Times Square in New York City.
The winds are blowing. Temperatures are sitting right around 28 degrees. If we dive into that, it's not just here in New York City, but it is cold across the entire eastern two-thirds of the country here this morning. A lot of spots getting down into the teens, getting into the 20s.
Meanwhile, from freezing cold to freezing funds, the Department of Health and Human Services freezing child care funds to Minnesota as investigations into the alleged fraud in the state continues.
The allegations continue to pile on in the Trump administration, hitting the state of Minnesota in several ways. First, from a law enforcement perspective, Homeland Security investigators there on the ground in Minnesota yesterday and the day before, and they will continue probing.
And that is Fox's David Spunt reporting. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 7:31 right now, 32 degrees and sunny. I'm Steve Taylor for the Vacationing David Wayne on News Radio 92.3. Well, downtown Pensacola is about to transform itself. The new Palafox project is breaking ground next week, but the work is not going to stop all the celebrations that are scheduled. Pensacola Mardi Gras is launching the second line Tuesdays. That's to keep the crowds downtown and support the local businesses during the construction. Danny Zimmerman, the president of the Pensacola Mardi Gras Foundation, says the community is ready to help.
We really want everybody to come down and support the Palafox businesses during Mardi Gras especially. They're all very nervous, thinking the street closing, but I promise nothing's really changing. Park where you always parked, you just can't park on Palafox, and come and walk Palafox and have a great time.
Mayor D.C. Reeves says he's impressed with the creative partnership.
I appreciate and applaud the efforts of the Mardi Gras folks to say, hey, how do we think of something outside the box to go help these small businesses? And I hope I continue to see some of that. And I'm very appreciative of creative ideas to say, hey, maybe there's a way we can, through this difficult time and complex time, that we can help continue to support our small businesses.
The Mardi Gras season is kicking off this weekend in Seville Quarter. Well, looks like the Holly DeVar Water System wants to raise rates again. Customers could see another 12% increase starting in 2026, just a year after the same increase in 2025. Local business owner Terry Light told Channel 3.
Yeah, I'm like anyone else. You know, I don't like to pay more for anything that I purchase, and I actually have a home and a business, so I'm paying twice for my water.
CEO Jeff Kriegler says the rising costs are forcing that proposal.
Our chemical costs are going up. Our supply cost, equipment cost. This is an energy-intensive process, so if energy prices rise, our costs go up there. You know, we need power to run our pumps and our wells and all that.
The system's aging infrastructure is needing attention. Most of the pipes and the equipment goes back to the 80s and 90s. If approved, the average bill for the people who are there would jump from nearly $90 to about $100. The board is voting on that on January 20th. Well, those of us who live here already know this, but it seems others elsewhere are agreeing. Two of the country's best beaches are right here in Northwest Florida. Condé Nast Traveler released the latest Reader's Choice Awards for the top beaches in America, and our very own Pensacola Beach, yay, took the number one spot. hot. Navarre Beach came in at number two. Nearly 757,000 people around the world voted on the list. The two Northwest Florida beaches even beat out five beaches in Hawaii that ranked third through number seven. So if you're looking for a world-class beach experience, go to the best beach. It's only a few miles away from downtown Pensacola. Let's check the forecast from Channel 3.
The last day of 2025 is starting out on a cold note. Temperatures in the 20s and 30s first thing this morning. Lots of sunshine will make way for those temperatures to reach the middle 50s this afternoon. Heading into the new year, temperatures back closer to average, looking at highs in the middle 60s for Thursday afternoon. I'm meteorologist Marian Caldwell with your WEAR First Morning Weather Update.
Now let's check out with John Pickens for Traffic on the Fives.
Brought to you by Princeton Grove Apartments is a new affordable housing community in Crestview. Introductory rates and no application fee. Resort style living awaits Princeton Grove Apartments in Crestview. No accidents to report to you right now, nor delays. I-10, I-110, 2990, 98 all look good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks, John. Well, 31 degrees right now as the sun is shining in Pensacola, 32 in Gulf Breeze, and 28 in Milton at 7:35. Next news is at 8, breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with your money now. The champagne industry has been filled with scandal in recent years as reports have emerged around the exploitation and mistreatment of champagne grape pickers. Reports of human trafficking and the mistreatment of workers and even several deaths provoked a scandal around working practices in the industry. The Federal Reserve has released minutes from its highly divisive meeting earlier this month. Officials expressed a variety of opinions during the December 9th to 10th meeting, but ultimately, the Federal Open Market Committee approved a quarter percentage point cut by a 9-3 vote. The move lowered the key funds rate to a range of 3.5% to 3.75%. Realtor.com says the typical home buyer now needs 7 years to save for a down payment. Mortgage News Daily reports the average interest rate for a 30-year fixed mortgage is currently sitting at 6.19%. Futures are slightly lower Tuesday. The Dow Industrials lost 94, the NASDAQ down 55, the S&P 500 down 9. That's your money now.
Looking for something new? Try fencing, the Olympic and Paralympic sport that mixes speed, strategy, and fun. It's like chess meets cardio. Quick feet, quick decisions, and a satisfying beep when you score a point. Kids, teens, and adults can start anytime. No experience needed, and many clubs have loaner gear. Coaches teach fundamentals and safety from day one. Find a beginner class near you at usafencing.org/tryfencing. That's usafencing.org/tryfencing.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Welcome in 2026 as Pensacola Beach lights up the skies. Enjoy the show at midnight all along the Pensacola Beach Boardwalk. Start your new year with an exhilarating rush. Take in the polar bear plunge on Pensacola Beach. Be a dipper or a spectator beginning at 2 behind Paradise Bar and Grill. See visitpensacolabeach.com. Submit your event at newsradio923.com.
Are you looking for the best news in talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Mayor D.C. Reeves joins us now. Sir, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. Happy New Year's Eve.
No doubt about it. Happy New Year's. We all ring in the new year tomorrow. And, of course, obviously, Merry Christmas to you retroactively, if I can speak for a living.
we're both struggling.
I know. Let's dive in a little bit. The free parking on Palafox. The street's going to close Monday at 6 a.m. You guys want cars off by Sunday evening. You want all of the paraphernalia on the sidewalk off by Friday. 4 o'clock, I think, is what Adrian Walker said in the press conference yesterday, which all makes perfect sense to me. The free parking, the 400 or so spaces, where are those spaces going to be? What does that mean?
It's really going to be in the general surrounding area. It'll be both up on parkpensacola.com and the newpalafox.com before the closure takes place. But it is really kind of spread. If I were to try to cap it, it would be basically parking spaces along the east side, Jefferson, Garden Street, North Palafox, that isn't affected. It's basically really the closest areas to Palafox that are on street parking that aren't affected. Our first conversation way back.
Uh-oh. Call back, DC. Is he still there? Would you answer that, John, and put him on hold? All right, there we go. Do it. John doesn't know which button to press. Mayor, are you there?
Hey.
He's there.
I'm here.
There we got it. He's trying to be fast. I get it. Sorry about that. Go on. And we first started talking about this.
Sorry. So it's the spaces in and around the construction site, ultimately.
Right.
Really the closest ones. We had a conversation about the garage at one point. There's some complications with that, with people that have parking permits that for the nearby businesses.
Okay.
We didn't want to mess that up either. So so the garage, I believe, will still operate as normal, but for the most part, and of course, there's free parking up top during the day, as there always has been. But the safe thing to assume, and of course, there'll be signage out there for anybody coming downtown, is really everything on the Jefferson Garden and North Palafox is a good basic synopsis, but we'll have it down to a detailed map for you on both of those websites.
And the key, I think we probably cannot say this enough, the key is that all the businesses will remain open, all of the sidewalks will remain open. You will be able to get where you want to go on foot. The only thing you can't do is drive a car on Palafox or across Palafox until they finish the segments, right?
That is correct. And I used the analogy yesterday. If you follow any type of news in New Orleans, or if you've been to New Orleans in the last, I don't know, 50 years, every time in the French Quarter, there's a road that where you don't even really notice it. The road is closed because you're not thinking about driving. You're thinking about walking in the French Quarter.
Right.
So where the sidewalks are fully open, they certainly are not giving out 412 free spaces or doing websites or doing marketing or doing all of those things. So I certainly stand behind the proactive effort that our team has put together to make this as seamless as possible. So, but absolutely, at least six feet of the sidewalk on both sides, including connectors. You're going to be able to, as a pedestrian, actually walk across the site to get to either side of Palafox as well. You're not going to have to go all the way around or anything like that.
What is the expected time frame for opening up the ends at the north end and the south end, the garden end and the main street end? I know the overall project is going to be, 5 months, 6 months in that vicinity, but what are we to expect in terms of vehicular access to the extremities?
Are you talking about just the first block of each side of the construction?
Yeah, because I know you're going to open up when you can, and you're going to open up at either
correct
end going in, basically, until you finally can open it all up in the middle. But what's the timeline for getting pieces of it open to vehicular traffic?
There's no hard timelines. Again, if you recall, that was kind of part of the negotiation with the contractor, was to say, hey, look, give us pieces back while you can.
Right.
Ultimately, we understand that May 24th is the incentivized deadline, but there's no reason to keep it closed if you don't have to. So it's hard to say. I mean, obviously, if it was only a week before May 24th, we'd probably just wait.
What's the value, right?
Or 6 weeks before, certainly we would open it. So, but the key is, it's not just getting that piece of Palafox open. We got to get the cross street open, right? Because
right
if not, you have no circulation. You just have a cul-de-sac.
Right. We don't want dead ends and people can't turn around, right?
Move people. Exactly. So we'd have to, really the key there is the Romana side. So from a driving standpoint, driving on Palafox, which I'll be honest with you, it's never my biggest advice right now. Even in non-construction times, it's busy. People are parallel parking. That light is 5 seconds long at Garden Street. It might be more limiting, but I think the key is trying to get all that construction activity, fencing, all that stuff out of there as soon as we can, to enjoy the new stormwater, enjoy the new ADA accessibility and crosswalks and everything else.
One last question on this subject. I was kind of talking through it earlier today, and I am assuming, and all the businesses are assuming, and I think all of the discussion has been assuming, that businesses are going to lose money in the process, no matter how much we do to try to help them, that's likely. But logically speaking, It's also possible businesses would hold even like normal. It's possible, logically, that they might make more money, whether because a pedestrian zone on Palafox turns out to be a better business decision than a car zone, and or because people are pitching in and trying to support local. I think it. I wouldn't venture much money on that bet, of course, but I do think it's going to be an interesting source of information for the experiment because people, of course, historically have asked, would we not be better if we made a downtown pedestrian zone instead, right?
Exactly, and I think that's why we have to not look at this as a 5-month inconvenience. We have to look at this as a 25-year convenience. It's a 25-year investment in what's going to happen for everybody, for safety when visitors and residents are down there, to business owners, and you've heard me talk about this over the many, many months we've discussed this project. You know, if you look up the data point of dwell time, there is mounds of data about if it's more comfortable for me to sit on a park bench or walk around with downtown with my kids, what am I going to do? I'm going to spend more money. If it feels like it's a thoroughfare and I've only got 3 feet of sidewalks going by people's picnic benches, I'm less likely to be dwelling, therefore less likely to be window shopping or anything else.
Yeah.
So there's lots of data that supports it. As a matter of fact, and I know obviously two very different cities, very different functions, but it's topical. I think the Seaside Institute just posted in their market square, they took away parking on the north side and turned it into seating areas, pedestrian. And they're talking about what a transformation it's been, you know, for access, for safety and all those things. And there's a million examples, including in cities more like ours, that's why people are investing in this. And that's why people, if they want it to be safer, they want it to be somewhere that's easier to enjoy. And they wanted to be able to stand up infrastructure-wise to the challenges of the next couple of generations.
Yeah, I mean, we were just in St. Augustine to see the Christmas lights, and it was really cool. The bulk of the area that is normally an auto zone has been shut down for pedestrians only for the lights, but the places that are just pedestrian only anyway, I mean, it's amazing the number of shops and restaurants and bars and, you know, all kinds of stuff in their pedestrian-only zone that is, I mean, it's, you know, I envy us having something like that here. Again, not advocating that we need to turn Palafox into that, but, you know, it's food for thought, for sure, about, as you say, how people behave as consumers when they're in a place where they don't feel like they're trying to get hustled out of it by the cars or the way the cars behave. We're talking to Mayor D.C. Reeves. Mr. Mayor, hang on for just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents or delays to report to you right now. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you so much. We got to talk about the Pensacola Police Chief. You know, we have talked a little bit about this in the past. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple of different events coming up. There's going to be for the public event, there's going to be questions. There's a couple of different ways that this is being done. There's going to be a thing for the business owners and so forth. I do think there is definitely a question that people are asking, and I know you've seen some of the Facebook posts from the people in or formerly in PPD. There's a lot of question around, why didn't we just hire Eric Goss? I mean, if he turns out to be the guy, I get it, but, you know, we did this once before. Kevin Christman didn't get the job. Instead, you know, we got Chief Randall. There was a lot of controversy surrounding that still to this day, I think. And so the concern is, why go through this process and why not just hire the person that we know?
Well, lots of reasons. Number one, public safety is our top priority. And here's what I expect from the search, regardless of who the winner of the search is, who's offered the position, that I really expect two things. Number one, all of the public engagement that's happening, as you well know, more than any of the 18 other city departments, is part of the job. So anybody who's going to be fit for the job would certainly need to be able to, in this platform, in this area, be able to communicate, convince, give a positive impression to the citizens. And so we certainly are not required absolutely to have public events, not to have a public forum. We're not required to do that. Ultimately, the mayor or the city administrator could, just like it, the Parks and Rec department or the IT department, can select and then need a vote of the council to do whatever they want. But as we know, public safety is the number one issue, and I feel that the openness and transparency of being able to hear from the next chief one way or the other is important, because everybody comes with different perspectives. Sadly, I can't speak to what happened before. I wasn't here. I didn't select the finalists. I didn't have the scoring rubric of why the finalists were the finalists. As a matter of fact, I couldn't name you other than Chief Randall who the other finalists were. I don't even know. Chrisman had dropped out, in that process. That being said, the way I see it is we want the best person for the job. And the best person for the job could be external, and the best person for the job could be internal. There's no doubt about that. And to me, if we want the best person for the job, then why are we afraid of a process? I guess is my question. So whether you support Eric, who's I have the utmost respect for, and I know so many people do in our community, or not, I feel like I don't understand why there should be a fear of a process. To allow the community to engage, to allow the public to engage, and to ensure that we pick the best person for the job. If this was any other department, would someone say to me, hey, Mayor, why don't you, I don't know why you don't ask anybody's opinion. Why don't you just pick the person you know the most? I usually would get criticized for something like that, actually, I think in most cases. So, we have three good candidates. It's not an indictment of or a compliment to anyone. This is a front-facing process for a very, very important position. And I'm looking forward to the conversations on 13th and 14th.
I think that the answer to that, which is not in the conversation, but the response people would give to that is, well, you know, we've had a 20-year interview for Eric. And somebody might show good for 10 hours, and they may or may not be able to adapt to our culture once they get here. We've had a massive long interview with him over all this time, and we know he adapts well to this culture. And so those two unknowns have kind of been worked out of the system. And I know this is a sort of a philosophical perspective, in hiring, but I think that's kind of the, maybe somebody flubs his oral exam. That doesn't mean he wouldn't be a great chief. Somebody else is really good at the oral exam and, okay, does that mean he's going to work as a chief? So, I know you've thought through that is, raising the different opinion that I'm sure some people have. I wanted to ask about the tree, the Belvedere Park tree, because you explained this yesterday, but for people who've been following this story, it turns out that they've admitted it was a mistake, but it also turns out it's not technically a heritage tree. And so there's a bit of uncertainty whether there can be any fines applied. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. I do put this in the category of, putting me in good perspective that we don't have huge problems in the city. This is a 6-foot long piece of tree, obviously, that inadvertently was cut, not the entire tree, a limb of a tree, and by one of our contractors.
I looked at it with Jen Brer, she made it, I thought there were multiple branches that were cut, even though it was the one big one, but there was a lot of trimming that took place around the periphery.
Well, for the sake of, in my mind, I would have to have Parks and Rec verify the number of ones that aren't in discussion. Obviously, the only thing that's on my desk is the discussion over the potential heritage designation of this tree and what the potential fine would be.
Okay.
So, but point being, obviously, it was inadvertent. The contractor reached out and apologized about that. But yes, we're going through getting to finality on what the designation of the tree is based on our normal definition as it pertains in our ordinances. So what I said yesterday and certainly would repeat is just because they've apologized doesn't mean no action will be taken. We will take whatever action is permitted under the ordinance.
Okay.
So if that means there can be $10 fine will be $10 fine. A $1,000 fine could be a $1,000 fine. Okay, that doesn't just because it's been acknowledged doesn't mean we aren't going to take any action whatsoever. But compared to the initial reaction that this was a heritage tree and all that, as we've gone to further investigation, it may not have that designation. According to our folks. So all I can say at this point is, we're going to do to the extent what we're permitted to do as it pertains to punishment or fines for this action. But it is important, obviously, as you can imagine from my desk, it's important for one of our contractors to acknowledge that this happened, that they apologized, that it was certainly not malicious and that this was an inadvertent thing of an employee trying to do something that a citizen requested and just not understanding the protocol of how that type of decision would need to operate.
It's not a huge thing, but it is a successful thing. And we're just totally out of time. But the Martin Luther King Jr. Plaza and the skate park both have Portland Lose in and active, right?
Yep, that's right. Both in the ground. Now we have bathrooms at these nice parking facilities that we invite people to.
And the third one, the park behind TT Wentworth. Where was the third one going to be? Bruce Beach? I just can't remember.
Yeah, it was going to be there. ECUA has some issues just logistically putting it there.
Okay.
What I'd say right now, we have two left. We're considering both Seville Square because of all the activity that happens there.
Okay.
And we're also, of course, waiting to see what happens at Veterans Memorial Park.
Okay.
That's way over budget, and that might be a deal that we could make.
Okay.
So at least provide that handicap accessible restroom at VMP.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing that. And obviously, we all want a solution at Veterans Memorial Park. Very good. We always like to end with a little bit of a lightning round for the mayor. First question, it is New Year's Eve. Do you have a New Year's resolution? Are you the kind of person who makes New Year's resolutions?
Yeah, I do. I haven't decided what. I have a few more hours.
So your resolution is not to procrastinate next year.
I never really get creative with it. I try to get to, I do lots of gym trips in January.
Okay, I see. Yeah. All right, so health-related matters. I got you. When you leave the home for vacation, do you unplug or disconnect or discontinue water service, electronics, nothing at all? What do you do to prepare your home when you leave for a week?
Yeah, no, rarely. I don't have enough bandwidth in my day to do normal stuff. I certainly don't have enough time when I get back to then call and sit on hold for however long. If it was something major, then.
Do you unplug anything?
Not that I can think of.
Oh, that's the John Pickens approach. Okay, so see, the mayor's on your side, John. Yeah. You guys do it the same way. I like that. And exactly. When it comes to a piece of cake in a pan or brownies, center, edge, or corner?
You know what? I heard you mention this several days back or whatever. I absolutely like, it's two different. I go center for brownie and edge for the extra icing on the cake.
Oh, you and my wife agree. Okay, so you want the icing on the edge, but you want the center mushy, squishy part for the brownie.
I don't need any crusty brownies on the corner. I mean, I don't know who would pick a corner brownie. That's me,
most of the civilized universe. But you are once again in complete alignment with John Pickens. So, if there's a job opening and you decide things don't go your way next year, then you can come work for me.
There in the studio.
Nice. Well done. I appreciate that. Mr. Mayor, Happy New Year. We'll talk to you next week. As always, thank you so much for the time.
All right, absolutely. Thanks.
John Pickens, the aforementioned person, has traffic on the fives.
I knew I loved this guy. I knew it. There was another reason. All right, so no accidents to report to you, nor any delays. I'm not seeing anything that's going to slow you down this morning for the last day of the year.
Except for the way you're talking right now.
I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
If you need a new vehicle, Frontier Motors has a fantastic selection of good quality used cars, cars that are 1 to 3 or 4 years young, low miles, great condition, A quality cars, like ABCD A quality. They stand by them. They warranty everything that they sell for 10 years or 100,000 miles, so they stand by that. That's not extra. That's included. Okay? Very easy to work with. It's a bottom line price, and that's the only thing you ever talk about. There's no, oh, hey, by the way, also this. No, it doesn't work that way. Go in one place, look at hundreds of cars if you like to, but drive several different ones and get a good sampling and make sure that the thing that you're looking at is exactly the one that you want. If they have it, you can buy it. If they don't have it, they'll go find something for you. They shop for people for cars all the time. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Thinking of refreshing your home for the holidays? Good news! Jonathan's Flooring can help. Now, through the end of December, Jonathan's is offering a special deal. They'll paint any interior room, walls, and trim up to 12 by 12 feet for only $299, including paint. Select from a large variety of colors, and rest assured, Jonathan's delivers first-class workmanship. To set your home's refresh appointment, stop by Jonathan's Flooring on North Palafox, just south of 9 Mile Road, or online at jonathansflooring.com.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel this Friday at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. Have a boating question for Stephen? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them this Friday at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Silence, you ninny!
Dr. Smith is the best. 759 News Radio 92.3. Steve Taylor has got a headline or two for us. Steve?
Well, NYPD is going to have tight security around Times Square tonight, as that city is expecting a million people in Times Square to ring in the new year. Thousands of officers in and out of uniform are there, being helped by canine units, also counterterrorism units. Basically, safety.
That was their, it's always their message. Right. That, and be sure to bring your diaper. Because you're going to be in that pen for a long time.
Long time, yeah.